This is Improvised Radio Theatre with Dice, with me, Michael Kuehl.
And me, Roger Bell West.
And to those of you who are listening on the first day that this drops, we have some very exciting news. Roger has had a wonderful opportunity. He's been given the chief editorship of a game from the 1970s, which is being revised, and look forward to the Kickstarter for Dallas, the role-playing game. And he is about to launch upon an unsuspecting world.
Gonna have the cat gold plated and everything.
Myself, I have good news. I will be attending the World Science Fiction Convention in Glasgow, and I've been given permission, as it's my birthday the day after the convention ends, that the Dead Dog Party will be me running a live action a game of En Garde, and I will be appearing in costume as the King, the Cardinal, and Queen Anne.
So all at once, obviously. That
is going to involve a lot of rotation, depending on who I'm talking to. But first of all, Roger has an announcement to make.
Well, not so much an announcement as we have received some money. Thank you, Patrick Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Riley. God bless you, sir.
It does encourage us to keep the show going, as you hear. So, thank you very much.
I've got that costume to pay for.
And three-thirds of a costume, I guess. And if you want to do this, paypal.me/RogerBW and let us know how you'd like us to acknowledge you on the show.
And onwards. But enough frivolity. Seriously now, we have a juicy offer at the Bundle of Holding. Those nice people who send us free samples of what they're putting on in order to persuade us to mention their wares. We rigorously, what's the word I'm looking for?
Skim.
Curate, that's the word I was looking for. We rigorously curate these and bring you only the best. And
or
I would
at least
like
the ones that seem interesting to us. I mean, if you're into D&D 5th edition and stuff for that, well, there's a lot of it on the Bundle of Holding, but we're not, so you probably won't hear about it from us. This is no indication of quality in any direction.
We certainly will not have given the 5th edition stuff any sort of curating at all. That doesn't even get downloaded. That's snobbish of me, I know. But anyway, Fiasco is what's on. It's running till the 16th, so you have plenty of time to pick this up.
This is mostly a repeat of the 2019 offer.
Yeah, I think there's one or two things that weren't in the 2019.
There is specifically one new thing, which we'll come to.
So the
we mentioned that back in episode 77.
And we were enthusiastic then. We're still quite enthusiastic now.
Yeah.
Fiasco was designed as a game in which you could run Coen Brothers comedies, in which you could run stories about people who have high ambitions and a poor impulse control. The sort of person who, finding a corpse and a suitcase full of money, think that this is good news for them.
Mm-hmm.
And
since I first played it, I've actually seen some Coen Brothers films.
Well, right, perhaps you have a stronger sense of what is going on. It's about the sort of stories where people are moving blindly or open-eyed towards some sort of disaster, and it's not entirely set amongst the lowlifes of life. There are high life follies as well. Each setting is what's called a play set, a set of tables and suggestions that allow you to set up in that world. There are several featuring well-known role-playing games, Ars Magica, and I think some of the vampires are amongst the stuff that has been done. Paranoia is obviously an obvious one for this.
The impression I get is that rather than say, I will play this playset several times, the intended consumption mode is I will play this playset and then I'll play that other one and then I'll play that other one and maybe come back to the first one later if you feel like doing it again. And this is, by design, I think, a single-session game.
It is. You can't make this into a campaign, though it might inspire you to go and write something of a very depressing... There are bits of Unknown Armies. Unknown Armies as a setting is just dying for fiasco-based stuff. And I was just thinking, Ken and Robin recently did a session which they jammed about creating Renfields, the role-playing game in which you are playing the minions of Dracula or some other old and terrible vampire. And that would be a natural for a fiasco.
Probably not related to last year's film, though which is almost as good as it wants to be, and that it completely drops the ball. But anyway, that's a different podcast.
We'll put his different podcast in the show notes.
I think there are 11 total if you go for the full threshold thing. Playsets in this.
There are a lot available online. There was one of those vanished bursts of enthusiasm for the system when it first came out, and a lot of people wrote one or two playsets for it.
Also, extremely generous licensing terms. Don't quote me on this. I'm not a legal advisor, but I think it's something like if you want to do one and we like it, we'll publish it, and if we don't like it, you can publish it. Something like that. So.
Yeah, which is, we keep telling people, the sensible way to do it. If you're trying to make your small press game sing and be impressive and push out more creativity and perhaps create other games.
So two things I would like to mention specifically here. One is, although this is officially a GM-less game, I think it needs at least one player who fully groks how it works. I say this on the basis of I have had a very enjoyable game of this with you.
Yeah.
I can't say running it exactly because there isn't a running it, but facilitating it.
Yeah,
facilitator is. And I have tried to facilitate a game with other players who had played it even less than I had, and it really didn't work. So there's that.
Yeah.
The other thing is this is old Fiasco, not the new card based version. Which, frankly, I think is a good thing.
The new card-based version, it feels to me like a crippled version of the main game. It reduces possibilities. The way the game works is that you sit in a circle and you roll some dice. And out of the tables in the playset, you create, I would suggest, first of all, you create the relationships between... the players. You have a relationship with the player to your right, you have a relationship to the player on your left.
And this will say something about who you are.
Yeah. I mean, you are to the player on your right, she may be your psychiatrist and you may be her patient. The pale heir on your left, you may be their teacher and they may be your pupil.
And then that tells you, right, I'm a teacher and I'm going to see a psychiatrist. And that's start generator. Yeah.
And then you add ambitions, things, what are they called?
Needs.
Longings, needs. Things you want to do, things you want to have, things you want to be. And you tie those to the relationships. And then as general storytelling resources... You create objects and places as things in the setting around the. If you're at, you're playing at a high school, it might be the gym, it might be the space underneath the stands at the gym where you go to have sex. If it's Dracula's castle, it may be the library or the dungeons where you are keeping the next meal. And the objects can be anything from a stake to drive through the master's heart to the aforementioned suitcase full of money.
Yeah, this looks as if it would be very easy to design for. I suspect it is much harder than it looks.
Yeah, I think to fill out all the tables that are suggested and to create enough possibilities. You're creating the setting in terms of emotions and relationships and places, and that's quite hard. You have to create more than any individual game will ever use, so that the players can make choices between this and that when they're setting it up.
Mm.
And they don't feel cramped. In fact, they feel as if they haven't got to everything they wanted to do. Well, they're going to go with what they've got. Once you've got everything set up, you go around the table doing individual scenes. Somebody sets up the scene, and the other player in the relationship decides whether the scene went the way the central character wanted it to.
And you can choose this either way. You can either define the outcome or define what the scene's going to be about.
Yeah. And so you're invited for a certain degree of control to put yourself in the hands of the other players, and they will drop the thing they think would be fun into the story and drop it on you. You get a positive die. You got a pool of dice in two different colours. You get a positive die if it went your way. You get a negative die if you don't. And then halfway through the game, you roll the dice and you get the mid-game incident.
Tilt.
Tilt, that's the term. The way the story twists in the middle of the game, and by rolling the dice. And then you go on to the end collecting more dice, and finally, after it's played itself out, each individual player takes the dice and rolls the ones they've got. They subtract the negative from the positive, and which either way it works out, there's a table which tells you whether you're one of the people who gets out of this well, happy, pretty content, they got away with the suitcase full of cash, or they managed to stake master, and who ends up the addicted ghoul of another different vampire later on.
The weird thing, and I'm sure I've said this before, is that if things go really well for you or really badly for you, you do well overall. And if things are a bit mixed, then you do ridiculously badly. I'd assume that this was a characteristic of the films, but I don't think it is. I think it's just a game thing. Honestly, I find the resolution... It feels tacked on. It's not really a part of the game. You could play the game working towards getting all the dice of a particular sort, but I think that would detract from the actual playing of the game.
I think it's a nice device for creating the scene at the end of Dragnet or whatever the Locus Classicus is. The scene where it says, Shirley Ann, or spent 15 years in jail and is now the wife of the pastor of Greenfields.
Hmm.
It's the inevitable. The world finds out what you're doing and drops its wrath upon you, which isn't inevitable. It's a matter of random chance here, but you need something to wrap it up. I think it works.
Yeah, so it's out there. It's not super expensive. It's probably not something I'm likely to run again unless I feel I understand it much better. But it for the right people, for the right group, it can be great fun. So
yeah,
possibly worth a look.
We encourage you. I encourage you more than Roger does, but we encourage you.
One new thing about this, the file that wasn't already in my collection from last time, Space Post, which is not quite a standard Fiasco playbook, though it uses a lot of the Fiasco system. It is basically a game of a Becky Chambers novel without the name. You are the space.
Hang on, tell the nice people who Becky Chambers is.
Oh no, read Becky Chambers. Really, A Long Way to a Small Angry Planet was a breakout book, which there's a review on my blog. I'll link to it. But basically, it's a story in which there is stuff happening, but a lot of what's going on is individuals helping each other, having their crucial moments of realizing a thing about their background that is holding them back or whatever. I know I could certainly see doing this with Hillfolk, Drama System, because you've got the tech background, but the tech background doesn't particularly make any sense. And what is mostly important is the people.
Uh-huh.
In any case, Space Post is not directly derived from that, but that was certainly the influence that first occurred to me. You are a Space Post person. You are going from planet to planet, delivering messages, solving minor problems for the colonists. The whole thing is meant to be very low stakes, very
friendly, cozy, yeah.
And eventually, you get back, and you will talk to your fellow workers back at Space Post Office, and see how things went. It's interesting.
All right.
I think it would take the right group and maybe a bit of prior discussion just to set the mood correctly, because somebody who wants to be the big zappy hero is not going to be a good character here.
No.
But, well worth a look.
Okay. As I was trying to say a few moments ago, onward. We're going to be talking about two topics that are dear to my heart, or close to my mind anyway at the moment. And this is another in the series where Michael talks about things he is planning and why they're very, very hard. I'm trying to rustle together a new setting for my Monday night group, as the regular GM is recovering from surgery. And in my meandering and mental frustration, I've got as far as getting a vague sort of starter setting and a title, which is, you'll be glad to know, Orphans of the Broken Sky. I think that's rather poetic. I'm quite proud of that. But the thing that's preventing me going forward is the choice of system. And it strikes me that I've come across a thing that is a commonplace difficulty in the modern world of role-playing games, and a contrast between the systems available to me. And that is capacity of the system fighting against the simplicity of the system and against the difficulty in learning new systems.
Well,
I
think we're in an odd position here, because we are both fans of GURPS. And,
it's not dead. I think at the start of each mention of GURPS, we should say, it's not dead.
I'm still getting royalties. It can't be dead. But in terms of complexity, it's certainly an old-school system. And we've talked before about the original designer's notes for Man to Man, which I think are well worth reading.
Yeah.
If one wants to understand where GURPS is coming from. But one of the ideas there was that when you start a new campaign, you switch from Fantasy Campaign A with GM A to Fantasy Campaign B with GM B, or even Science Fiction Campaign, you would have a whole lot of new rules to learn.
Well, yes, and we talked about, we talked about this last week when we were talking about
the
death of
game.
Generic system.
But I think the way games have tended to go is into games that don't need system mastery, or at least appear not to need system mastery.
Hmm.
So you don't get the 300 skill list in any modern design. And you're right, GURPS 4th is 2000s era, but it clearly inherits a lot from GURPS 3rd.
And RuneQuest is the current RuneQuest is only a couple of years old. But it clearly goes back, and it's even a turning back towards its origins in the 80s and 90s.
If you dropped an original RuneQuest player there, they would know a fair bit of what you were doing without having to be told anything.
Yeah. But for me, the reason I'm probably going to end up using GURPS here, but the difficulty that introduces is the labour of the GM having to create a campaign introduction and a campaign. Here's the sort of character you can build. Guide. And that is the difficult point with GURPS. GURPS can, as I want to do something like the Exile setting I did, I think back around the turn of the century. Good grief, how old I feel saying that. In which some people are kicked out of a mountain village and told to go away and find their own prosperity in the world. Except that as I'm older, it's going to be a darker sort of world. I used GURPS then. And GURPS is a full-range game system and can do anything, more or less. It has a few areas.
It does some things better than others, but you are not, for example, trying to run a superhero game, so...
No, but if I suddenly needed to introduce a group of people with peculiar powers... then I would have the ability to do that. I mean, it's not going to be there at the start. I don't think it's going to be at the core of the setting. But I could introduce it. I could introduce aliens. That is the virtue of GURPS. For me and for my group, that's mostly a solved problem.
I'm assuming your group, like mine, are all basically reasonably old hands with GURPS.
Yeah, they're reasonably old hands with RuneQuest as well. But I've put aside RuneQuest because I've decided that it's... Actually, I was not going to go with RuneQuest because that is very dedicated to Glorantha and this isn't a Glorantha game. But I was looking at basic role-playing, but I decided that the magic systems just aren't developed enough in the basic set for me to do something which is basically swords and sorcery. With a proper sense of sorcery. I haven't decided what variety of GURPS magic I'm going to use. It's down to about two or three. But
this is going to sound very perverse, but do you recall RuneQuest 3?
I recall RuneQuest 3, yes.
Because that was probably the most divorced from Glorantha RuneQuest that there will ever be.
You're not wrong.
The sorcery system has its adherents. I'm not really one of them, but I'm
not really sure why, honestly, anybody wanted to adhere to it. It's not as bad as the current sorcery in RuneQuest Glorantha, because at least I felt I could understand it. It was weak and it was silly, and it didn't create mighty sorcerers. But
that wasn't my experience of it.
You've not started from a Sorcerer's Apprentice character and worked for years and got nowhere. That's my impression of it.
No, I played a game in which one of the other players had a sorcerer. I don't know where he started, but he understood how exponential growth worked, which the designers of the sorcery system apparently didn't.
Yeah.
And therefore was terrifying.
Okay, well, hang on. This is getting me into the weeds.
Anyway.
And into issues. What I was going to say was, I naturally turn to other systems. And reading through my catalogue of stuff I've acquired through a bundle of holding on my computer and looking at things, it struck me that there are two sets of role-playing games, two schools of designing role-playing games in existence at the moment. One of which derives from the 80s and 90s, and one of which derives from the revivals of the 90s and the early 21st century. That are in contest with each other. They both have modern examples, but they are different sorts of animals. And basically, it's the complex but broad-based and the easy to pick up, but deliberately crippled. And that worries me a little. I would worry if either of them got to dominate the hobby, but both of them have worrying characteristics. It seems to me that most games since Apocalypse World, most games have been saying, we want to do a very specific thing and we will only give you the tools to do that thing and no more.
Well, again, this maps back slightly to our comments on generic games, in that because theoretically the rules overhead of going into a new genre, or at least a new setting, is low, it is acceptable for a particular rule set to say, right, this is the genre we're dealing with. There aren't a lot of rules, but they are specifically focused on doing things that happen in this particular style. And when you change, you will change to a new rule set, and so we don't have to worry about that. You're not going to be bringing your characters across.
Well, I think the thing is that I have noticed there is a monstrous hybrid. There is a game which is dedicated to doing one thing, but it wants all the complexity of early school role-playing games in order to do it. And I'm thinking of things like Earth Dawn, which I looked at and admired deeply but could not get my head around. Exalted, which is a prime example of something that you would never use anywhere else, but that is so intricately and eccentrically woven into the structure of the thing it's about, that it's very, very hard to understand. There is no introductory adventure into Exalted, and I don't know if there could be. There are for Earth Dawn, and I was sort of tempted to actually go with Earth Dawn for a moment, because it has a bit of the ruined post-magical apocalypse that I'm thinking of going for with the new campaign. But it was just too many long lists, too much detail, too much having to know a lot of stuff before you generated a character for me to do it at my age. I'm starting to get to the feeling that my brain is not capable of taking on another system of the size of RuneQuest or GURPS. And it may be me being stuck with what I've got.
I don't remember Earth Dawn being super complex, but I only played it once and we were at pretty low level and not really getting involved in complicated things. So,
Did you have to design a character?
Yes. But, yeah, and a starting character.
How old were you?
Me or the character?
You. How subtle was your brain?
I don't know, 30s.
I think that's not too late. But it may be that I have come to the point where I can't absorb a new system. And I find many of my players are getting to that age as well. And finding things... I mean, some of my players just ignore the system and say, tell me what the dice do I roll.
Well, that's a thing that a system can do, but it needs to be thought through a bit. I mean, in a GURPS game outside combat, you can say diegetically, you know, I'm going to take this action. I want to search through this library for information about X or whatever.
Yeah.
Which is a perfectly reasonable thing that you don't need to know the rules to do.
And
you can then say, well, yeah, I don't care how long it takes. I'll stay all night if I have to. I need to find this information. And the GM can say, okay, you're taking extra time. That's this modifier. That's fine. Yeah, it works. When you get to combat, and especially, and I keep saying this because I think it's the biggest flaw with GURPS, when you get to character design, there are traps. There are things you can do. There's a board game called Food Chain Magnate, in which you have about three options. It's a basically build up your commercial empire thing.
Yeah.
There are about three options on your first turn, and one of them will absolutely destroy you. But it's still left in the game.
There are plenty of things in GURPS where plenty of times I've heard players say, oh, I should have taken X from the start. I didn't know about that. Can I do it now? Normally, my tendency is to say, yes, suddenly you discover this ability to have combat reflexes, or I don't know what.
Shave some points off a skill you didn't already have. Yeah, and that's what templates were supposed to solve. And yeah. they don't seem to have solved it.
I think the difficulty is I'm going to have to read the books about creating templates. I have tried to. Because I think I'm going to have to... Yeah, except that the template is a device for spreading things far and wide. And what I'm going to end up doing, I know I'm going to end up doing, is writing the characters for the players. And they're going to bitch about it, but that's the only way I can get them into the somewhat eccentric setup.
Might I suggest that you consider lenses as well? The boundary is a little fuzzy, but you can have multiple lenses. So you might have a template of somebody who has grown up in this village. And probably everybody takes that. And then you have the lens for, and I was a farmer, or I was a whatever.
I shall have to look up what the distinction is between a lens and a template.
As far as I can see, a template is a thing you have one of, and it's generally bigger.
I think you can do racial cultural templates. And occupational templates on top of that. That's certainly doable in most modern systems. But do you agree that there is a split between modern systems which are crippled but easy to get into? Is that a fair characterization?
Well, I wouldn't use the term crippled. I would say perhaps simplistic.
That's not exactly polite either.
Everybody agrees that there should basically be one resolution mechanic that you use for everything. You know, unlike early D&D, where you have one role for bending bars and another role for picking locks and things. I think it is generally accepted that there should be basically one thing you do in terms of the randomizers doing a task. And
I'm not entirely sure that's always true, but go on.
There should only be one sort of dice roll you make, put it that way.
Maybe. I'm not committed.
Generally. And within that, you can have a game that says, this is very simple. You just add up your skill and your stat and then apply the dice and then see how well you did. But that can be a list of 300 skills like GURPS, or it could be a list of 12 skills like Doctor Who. So,
But the thing is, the broader the skills, the mushier the feel of the game.
Well, this is where I think considering the genre of the game is important. I mean, I would not run Doctor Who, ancient or modern, in GURPS.
Because, I'm sorry. I just had a picture of a sacred book, Doctor Who, ancient and modern.
That's... The sort of story that is a Doctor Who story, in other words, the reason one is playing the game in the first place, is not this is terribly precise and painstaking and we know exactly what we can do. It's, did I ever tell you I was an expert lockpicker?
That is, the flashback and the sudden discovery thing is... It's a very useful and valid writing technique, and I don't have a problem with it.
Well, there's a game that's entirely based on it, 316 Carnage Among the Stars. Basically, the standard resolution mechanic is: here is a problem. You have a flashback to the situation in which you learned how you learned something that would help you deal with this sort of problem, and then you flash forward again and resolve it.
I think that could get. I said it's valid. I don't think it didn't say it was universally applicable. But the thing is that the thing that worries me about modern developments is that it says this is the sort of game we're going to play, and we are never going to consider doing things which aren't appropriate to this sort of game, and that strikes me as going as contrary to both the possibilities of literature and the fun of mashups and fanfic.
But the metagame is larger than the individual game. I think this is the point. You go to a different, particularly early D&D, particularly in the UK, as far as I can see, but even in the US before it got standardised as AD&D, tended to be very freewheeling, and if a GM wants to put in something completely weird, that is considered entirely normal.
Mm.
But also that would have very long campaigns in it. And if you're going to play a short campaign, if you, 10 sessions, say, a long adventure, a short campaign, and then you've done the thing that, let us say, Monster Hearts gives you to do, and that is over, and you do not continue the Monster Hearts campaign with a new thing to stop you getting bored. You play a different game. That is what the situation these things are intended to fit into. They're not trying to be the game that you will play for the next 5 years.
Yeah, but I remember one of the first times the crossover of genres struck me as a good thing, and that was even before role-playing games. That was UFO, Gerry Anderson's live-action program, which did that, combined the best of what he'd been doing before with the chance to do, has some actual drama with actual people in it. And at one point, we got the soap opera episode in which Ed Straker's failed marriage got caught up in his fighting of aliens, and he found himself unable to use his power and his authority to save his son's life, and disappoints his, breaks the heart of his ex-wife in the process. I thought that was wonderful. It did two things at once. It moved you, and it gave you the action thing as well, and it made the whole thing fly. And I have a feeling that yes, you're right about the old days. I mean, look at the interview we did with Old Geezer back at the start of this. He was talking about they just made stuff up and they bung things in, and they worried about the mechanics later, if at all. But I have got a dread of finding myself in a campaign where players ask me something perfectly reasonable, and I say, I'm afraid I do not have any means of resolving that. Indeed, it goes against the established mechanics of X, Y, and Z. And that is why I worry about the modern game design's tendencies, even when I can get my head around them, which I can't always. Robin Laws's drama system and things like, what's that Jane Austen game that you liked? High Society or something like that. Yeah. I couldn't get my old game head around. Because it didn't have what I was used to.
Well, what you're expected to have there, I think, particularly with High Society and certainly with some of the Powered by the Apocalypse games, is player buy-in, that we are going to do a game that is about...
buy-in is
Regency useful. People on the marriage mart, or surviving the post-apocalypse and going out and Mad Maxing our neighbours and that kind of thing.
How do you Mad Max your neighbour?
Get them to beat you up a lot, I think.
Oh.
And take your car.
In Britain, my dear sir, we have people who will do that for money.
That's, I think it, the thing that's one of the reasons I like role playing, it's not the major part of it, but it is indeed that it can go in unexpected directions. This is why I've always felt edgy about referring to the computerized stuff as role-playing games, because the thing they cannot do, and it's been tried many times, is go outside what has been programmed. And for that, you need real AI, not the rubbish that's being sold now. You need an actual conscious mind saying, yes, all right, I hadn't thought of this. Now I will work out how to resolve it. But, I mean, in a computer game, it could be as simple as, well, what if... one of the first things I asked my first dungeon master was, you know, we've been introduced to this you know, here we are on the steps of the dungeon. Well, what if we want to turn around and go somewhere else? I was an awkward player.
Yes, I can imagine that. I remember Fred Harris telling me that my answer of you're at the entrance to the dungeon. What do you do? What is the first thing you do? My answer, what he was wanting was you light a torch or a lantern so you can see what you're doing. What I said was, I'm going back and finding somebody else to come with me. It's dangerous down the dungeon. He eliminated me from the contest on that basis.
Chuck a hobbit down to check for traps.
I've got myself diverted from something.
Oh, surely not. We never digress.
All right, well, you may have managed to persuade me in this chat. But actually, what I ought to do is go back and have another look at incorporating sorcery out of RuneQuest. Actually, sorcery and shamanism out of RuneQuest 3. Into my new setting.
Well, the thing about 3 is it was at least a bit separated from Glorantha. I mean, many people hated it for it, but that was the situation. I think some of it's clearly what the players will put up with. Some of it is what the players will want to do. I mean, all right, I don't actually know anybody who likes Drama System. I know people who dislike it for a whole lot of different reasons, but it seems to me that if you want a story that is superficially about whatever, but really about the interrelationships of the party and the soap opera angle, it will see you right. If you want, you know, if you had your, I don't know, say that you could do the right stuff in Drama System, but it would not be at all about flying or being an expert pilot, or any of that stuff.
It'd be about politics and personality and doing the longest audition in the world for a particular part. you're being auditioned from the moment you step out of your jet plane and walk confidently towards the briefing room, going ting with your smile the whole time.
You auditioned for the time you get strapped into the capsule with no controls in order to prove that people can live in space. But anyway.
I think I sort of despair of really big systems nowadays. But I actually like them because of the capacity they give me. In a way, a system that has player-defined traits, player-defined abilities to do things, something like Unknown Armies, should be the best way to proceed at this moment in time.
The thing that always struck me is
tricky.
Oh,
damn it, now I've gone off on another tangent. Starting thinking of doing it with Unknown Armies. This always happens!
The thing that struck me as tricky is something like Fate. You have a number of aspects.
Yeah.
But those aspects can be very broad or very narrow, depending on the way you're thinking, and you need to have everybody on the same, roughly the same page as to how broad or narrow they are.
I think my main problem with Fate is that because of the nature of the plus and minus dice and the limits on the scale of achievement, you've got a very narrow range of being able to do things. It's not like Quest Worlds, which is theoretically infinitely scalable, but actually cheats and ignores things. And that's my main difficulty with Fate. Also, most of my players don't get what designing a good trait, ability, theme is. It's supposed to be narratively cool and just appropriate to the genre. And I have a couple of players in each group that can do that, and a lot of people who really don't want to be bothered.
And one thing that we've sidled around to the side a bit is the genre. I mean, to some extent, I think what you're arguing for is a genre that is at least partly defined by the players.
Ooh.
I don't mean this. I don't mean the trappings of the setting. I mean the emphasis here. Are we going to be a band of wandering ne'er-do-wells looking around for a cause to attach ourselves to? Are we going to stick together? Are we going to argue? That side of thing. Where is the emphasis going to be?
Well, the title of the, to a degree, in this case, I'm giving them. The set of people who they are going to be, which are orphans thrown out of a village because their parents were foreigners and we don't want them here in hard times. But it's down to them, the style and the character in which they do it. And that has to be defined by them, and that has to decide what I throw at them out of the darkness, what sort of fallen world they find when they leave their mountain Eden and go down into the lands below. That is going to play off who they decide to be. And I think you're right that I should give them the ability. This argues against the idea of totally pre-gen characters. It argues in favour of there being templates ready for them to pick up and to modify. And I really should be able to do that for them. But yeah, they need to be able to play a character who's suspicious, a character who's taciturn, a character who loves the whole world, and a character who hates liars. I think I can probably work around that, but I should give them examples. I should give them perhaps a three-stage templates, racial, professional, and emotional templates we could quite possibly clump together as things that are pre-generated for.
I'm not going to recommend to you the game that will support the sort of games you want to run. I don't even have this game that will support the sort of games I want to run. I have a number of designs that I've been fiddling with for some years and not got to the point of actually being runnable yet.
Where are your difficult designs?
Well, I look at GURPS and there's a lot of it. There's a big fat character sheet. Character generation takes ages, even with action. Character generation takes ages. It's a lot of work. If I want to run up an NPC, I mean, yes, I can say, right, this is a competent NPC. Their number at the things they're good at is 14. But that is not GURPS. That is me.
That is you interfacing with GURPS as much as you need to. I will say they've got these basic stats. They've got this level of skills. They've got this thing which will screw up the player's plans. And that's it, you know. You can fit that on a index card or in my memory.
But a character sheet is excessively big.
A full scale character sheet is too much.
There is too much stuff. Whether that's sorted by clustering or by something else, I don't know. But there are too many things on a character sheet to keep track of. Savage Worlds. I've played and enjoyed Savage Worlds. You were in the game. It's got this basic problem with some of the probabilities. It's got an emphasis on tactical grid play, which we didn't do, but it certainly hurt things when we didn't. It's got this card-based initiative, which doesn't really work well over a video link. Genesis. I like Genesis, but the people I've played it with don't.
I'm sorry about that.
You're not the only one. I do think that I like the I'm happy. Here's the thing. I'm happy with numbers. I'm happy with adding and subtracting and multiplying numbers.
Yeah. Most long-term gamers are.
Not in the States.
Oh, right.
This is a thing I've really only come to be fully aware of recently, but the eternal arguments over whether you should have a system where you want to roll high or a system where you want to roll low.
Yeah. What's up with them?
Does seem to come down to, I can add numbers, but subtracting numbers is hard.
Oh.
I don't blame the people for this. I blame a truly appalling mathematics education. But it's there. I've met people for whom this is the case.
Oh.
So, is probably not going to affect your players, but if I'm designing a system that I want to be used ever by anybody other than me, it's a consideration.
It's true. And just about... apart from those which are totally card-based or totally interpretation by the GM-based, I can't think of a system which doesn't require you to at least add and take away numbers of dice and things like that.
With Genesis, for example, I think it's done it to some extent in response to this. You're counting symbols and saying, I've got three successes and four advantage or whatever.
Yeah, and my difficulty was figuring out what the hell an advantage was on the fly. It was very difficult.
I've played the Doctor Who system. I quite like that. They've extended it to a couple of other things. I think, what was that very cheap time travel ITV series a few years back?
Puff, Piff. I didn't watch it. It was too cheap for me.
Anyway, they've extended it to that. Vortex system, they call the thing overall. But it's very blunt. And if what you want is fast-moving TV action adventure, it's not bad at all. But it doesn't really do anything else.
Yeah.
So I've got all these systems that I know more or less well that are touching on aspects of a system that I actually want, but I haven't got the system I actually want yet. I can just define it by the space that it occupies.
I think my problem is primarily a psychological one. I get into cycles of building campaigns and worlds and thinking about things I might be able to do. And then when I get down to the details, I find the work hard.
Yeah, the book work is boring.
And the third leg of the stool I keep falling off is thinking about my players and the baffled look on the faces of some of them. When I explain what I want or what we're going to be doing or who they are and saying, no, actually, that wasn't what I had in mind when they go off on one of their enthusiasms.
But they do stick with you.
They do stick with me. I think they may be trapped. This may be huis clos without anybody having told us we're damned. But anyway, I think I've wandered on enough about this. I would love to hear from the audience the things that they have picked up and have become really enthusiastic about. But at the moment, it looks like GURPS. It's starting to look a lot like GURPS, which is a chorus that you hear a lot of in this program.
Yeah, I mean, that's still my approach. I just, at this point in my gaming life, it's not that GURPS has changed, it's that I have changed. I want something that has a character sheet that fits on one side of A4.
You can do that, and you should do that. There is so much support for something like GURPS that I can think, hang on, I just have to tweak this and it'll work perfectly. I'm always deluded, of course, but, you know.
Anything can be bodged. I mean, I talked a few episodes back about running the Aliens RPG with fudge mechanics because the Aliens RPG mechanics were rubbish. And it worked really quite well. Not hard to convert at all.
There's somebody somewhere on the internet who's converted Traveller to games set in ancient Greece with merchant ships wandering between the city-states.
Yep.
And psychotopologically, they're the same thing. Anyway, let's move on. Roger and I and some friends have been engaged in stark villainy, in evil doing, in acts of theft and assault, in the lower classes and murkier segments of the world. We've been playing Blades in the Dark, which is an interesting game. I've looked at it from both sides now. From player and GM, and still somehow I think, oh gosh, this is quite hard. This is a very interesting exercise for a GM. Basically, you're starting out... Let me say something about the structure of the game to begin with. It's a game in which you are not only criminals in a... mystically, supernaturally, steampunky themed city. But you are the lowest of the low. You are the just starting out criminals. You've barely got some companions, let alone a gang. And there are lots of bigger players out there, and you have to step terribly delicately amongst them. And what it struck me after looking at it is that it's got something that another game I like called Rain potentially has, but doesn't have clear guidelines about setting up, which is a structure of rivals in a particular setting of groups that are more powerful than you, as powerful than you, and less powerful than you, set up and fighting their own corner to increase the power of their companies. And one of these days, I must take the lessons I have learned from Blades in the Dark and apply it to Rain, because I'm not entirely sure. I think Rain needs another book or maybe another supplement. But getting back to Blades in the Dark, how are you finding it, your personage who is now engulfed in crime?
Yeah, as somebody who has looked at the rules before but never actually played or run it prior to this, that my first impression is mechanistic, and I think this is where it comes. It's Apocalypse World roots show. The rules are quite short, but they are determined to say that everything that you can do is listed in the rules. And if it's not listed in the rules, then it's probably not a thing you should be doing because it's not properly in genre.
Yeah,
like the thing that I said when I first heard about the setting was, is anybody trying to work out why we don't have a sun anymore? And maybe do something about it.
I think the idea is that you are too desperately struggling to survive, to worry about that. And besides which, the people who look into that sort of thing tend to go crazy. Besides which, the answer may be that you're in hell.
But this is the sort of thing I was talking about earlier when I was saying that the game is saying this is the genre you have, not just the setting. It is a game about being criminals, and you would not use it for a game about being law enforcement, at least not a game about being honest law enforcement.
Certainly
not a game about being researchers or something.
It doesn't. In the background, there is the possibility of playing the greatest Call of Cthulhu investigation ever conceived, but that's somebody else's concern and it's not yours. That's not mechanistic. The theme is baked into the mechanics and limits the mechanics.
But also anything we do that is in genre, there will be a mechanic for handling it. Not because it's a huge game like GURPS, but because, like Apocalypse World, it is a game that's very tightly constrains the things you can do.
I think the thing that strikes me as the GM, and especially when I've been writing it up, is that it goes very rapidly from abstracted to specific to abstracted again. For example, you start out by investigating what the information the job might need. And then once you've done all that, you make a single roll of a few dice, and that tells you how well your initial approach to the game has gone. In the first episode we ran, the answer was you're in a corridor without any means of getting through the locked door in front of you, and there's somebody with heavy boots coming in this direction, which was just one roll. And the other thing that I find difficult is the fact that it says a thing and then it gives you the means to take it back. Not only does it have the flashbacks mechanic we were talking about earlier, the ability to say, well, luckily I brought with me my door forcing mechanism. It's of my own devising and I'm about to use it on the door. But when you're hurt, it allows you to say, but with your magnificent abilities in prowess or understanding things, I can ensure that I wasn't in fact hurt by that apparently deadly slash to my midriff.
Well, being fair, the GURPS cinematic rules can do that too. I'm going to spend a fatigue point to say that blow was just a flesh wound.
I think you should spend a character point for that sort of thing. But
that's for more serious.
Yeah, but it makes writing up the adventures very difficult because I hear, right, you're wounded, what are you going to do? And then it takes about 5 minutes to resolve that actually that didn't happen after all. Although that may get better as we understand the system better.
The thing I'm getting from this is there's probably a better term for it, but I would call it roll first, explain later, or roll first, narrate later. Yeah. So we will have a fairly abstract, here is how well we are doing in this particular encounter. And then have to explain and come up with, okay, well, you know, we're being beaten back, but at the last moment we pull out a heroic trick and prevail, that kind of thing.
And that's different in feel from what Ant did when he was fighting against the swordswoman. He said, "Bugger it! I'll pull out my pistol," which is a perfectly normal a role playing game thing to do, and perfectly believable, and doesn't involve any peculiar mechanics at all.
See, you know? Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah, but the moment at which we a second or two before. Rule that the swordswoman hadn't run in through. That was peculiar in that way. That was, let's make up the story, not simulate the event. And that's not a bad thing. It's common enough, and it's highly emphasised in this. And it does make having a decent degree of, a buy-in from the players absolutely vital. For this type of thing. And it works better at some moments than others, I'm thinking.
Mm.
And in some ways.
I have tended to assume in my role playing that Time's Arrow basically points forwards.
Yeah.
Almost all the time. And sometimes you can get, okay, the player just genuinely did not hear or did not understand that bit of description and ignored it. And then did something incredibly stupid, which they wouldn't have done had they realised what the situation was. See last episode in the adversarial GM. It is not my job to punish them for that. I will try to tweak things a bit, or you know, the player just isn't there for a session, and that's not something that can be avoided.
I think I tend to be stingier than you, and I tend to say, "All right, this we can go back on." That we can go, we can rewind time a little, but now we've committed to this other thing, which time has brought before us. we can't go back five steps to something that really shouldn't have happened.
I will say that kind of rewind for me is something that should be exceptional and minimal. It is not a primary storytelling tool. And if I wanted to write something where I could, or let us say, if I wanted to work on something where I could go back and edit things and set up the foreshadowings or whatever, I would be writing linear fiction. We have both done that. So,
I would say that it's strange to feel. There's not all, you can't always wind back time. It costs the most valuable thing in the setting, which is stress, which is the ability to absorb the shocks of being the scoundrel and the villain. And you've only got a limited access to it. It gives you boosts, it gives you abilities you would not normally be able to use. And it is, it does seem to be judged fairly well to allow an unstressed character at the start of a session to be able to last through to the end, only just touching the limits which would drive them over the edge by the end. And that is a nice job of design and calculation.
I can't help but find myself reminded of It Came from the Late, Late, Late Show. A role-playing game which in many respects was ahead of its time, which you are characters in a 50s boo movie, basically.
Yeah.
And the meta tools available to the players are things like, I just got wounded, well, I'll call for my stunt double. And we're in a bit of a mess, I'll call a film break, and so we snap forward 5 minutes to, and how did you escape? Well, it was easy, really. That sort of thing.
Yeah, I was thinking that sometimes the take-backs in Blades in the Dark remind me of Dick Barton's Special Agent and the cliffhangers at the end of this. Dick's gone! He's gone! This car's gone right over the cliff! And next week, no, he managed to jump free at the last moment. That's what it reminds me of.
I seem to remember King of the Rocket Men did something along those lines as well.
Yeah, well, every Saturday morning cereal. So, yes, are you enjoying the feel of the setting? Am I getting it right so far? Or don't you know
it? I think so. I mean, it is deliberately not a setting you can really explore. I mean, we can explore the bit of it that involves things that the criminal gang interacts with. Other criminal gangs, law enforcement, that kind of thing. It is clearly not a setting where you can really climb out of that to any significant extent. But, yeah, fair enough.
Your best hope is to gather enough money and quietly go and retire somewhere and never see the city again, I think. But most of you are probably going to be...
No, you can't do that. The city is like a woman and she wants her alimony.
That's rather good. I think you're destined to a quiet retirement when somebody comes along and drags you back into it all and asks you to do one last job.
Well, yeah, you either end up with a quiet retirement or a quiet retirement, possibly involving glugging noises
and lead boots.
Mm-hmm.
I'm quite enjoying it so far. I can see the limits of the game, even from the start of it. But I think there's going to be fun. I might even manage to get towards a climax. You never know.
Yeah, I mean, as we were saying earlier, I think it's a game designed for short campaigns, like a lot of modern games. You probably could run it for years and years. There's nothing actually built into it that will stop that happening. But I think eventually you're going to run out of advances to get, aren't you?
Yeah, but eventually your character's going to suffer sufficient trauma that you're going to want to take them out of play, or they'll be utterly unplayable.
Oh, no, that's not going to happen. It's going to be fine.
Yeah, you hear about that sort of thing. But no, the fellow dying horribly in the gutter, he wasn't important in his time. No, pay no attention to him. All right. Well, having established that, I think we can move on. Hopefully we will be able to report again from that campaign. It is proving fun. I'm not sure how long it's going to last for. I think the controlling factor here is going to be the interest and patience of the players. Because, honestly, from my point of view, setting up an afternoon's adventuring with this system is a piece of piss.
Well, it does have the flip side of that, which is that in order to get much out of it, the player has to be alert and involved and eye to the main chance pretty much at every moment.
You mean I should feed you more coffee, or I should come around to your houses and kick you before?
Feed myself more coffee. This is the thing we've talked about a bit in the Watson Hall group. We meet on a weekday evening, and sometimes we've just had a hard day at work. And we want to get together and have the good time that the game session is, but we don't necessarily want to be right on top of, I'll put this plan together and that plan together and think of this weird thing to do. And not necessarily, not all the time.
Well, the Blaze in the Dark game is at a weekend and in the middle of the afternoon. And we've just had
time for a nap.
I am the almost septuagenarian, mate, aren't you? And I'd say we've had our morning tea and coffee, and we're fed and ready for a ramble with our friends. I do know that my Wednesday night group requires a moment before we start playing for the people who are still working to be able to bitch about the nature of their burden. I think the limit is going to be the player's enthusiasm and how intricately I can make the soap opera and action intermingle along the way. We'll see. If you want to tell us why you are incapable of getting new campaigns to the starting gate, and why you dither between systems for months at a time, then you can contact us.
Leave a message on the website or email podcast@tekeli.li.
And we'll speak to you again in another month's time.